Great. Thank you. We are starting a little late, so don't blame me if we run a little bit late here as well. Usually I start, you know, when I'm the last talk, I say we save the last for best, but Dr. Davies' talk was really good. So it's going to be hard for me to top that, but you'll be excited to hear about this one and done therapy that I'm going to talk about called CAR T cells. So I really sense he really was really optimistic about that. So I'm going to tell you a story about really the work I've been doing over a decade, developing and optimizing next generation CAR T cell therapy with these dual targeted CARs for non-Hodgkin lymphomas. I put a disclosure slide in, and here, you know, this is a room clearly familiar with CAR T, and I'm going to highlight we have lots of CD19 CAR Ts. They've changed the landscape of how we think about hematological malignancies and using immune therapy. We, you know, Dr. Davies already went over the complex steps involved with CAR T and some of the limitations of the current therapies that we have. I want to hone in on sort of two sort of major limitations that I want to focus on. And so number one, you know, I think it's correct to say that not all patients relapse because of loss of CD19, but there's a subset of patients where downregulation of CD19 has been seen on post-relapse biopsies. This is data from the MD Anderson group looking at Yescarta patients, and when they did post sort of biopsies, they found that about 30% of patients, you know, lost CD19 but still maintained high CD20 status. And so the idea here is that there might be tumor heterogeneity at the baseline, or people are actually seeing selective pressure against CD19, leading to a clonal population that then emerges that is no longer responding to the CAR T that was given. And so sort of the end of this paper was, you know, maybe multi-targeting of CAR Ts, targeting more than one antigen may improve clinical outcomes. The other thing I want to highlight, which is a big premise of my work, is how we actually deliver CAR Ts and the current model and the limitations of the current model. So, you know, all of us who give commercial CAR Ts, we have to use this very complicated system. We apherese a patient at our site, but then we're shipping these cells, you know, far away to sometimes other countries, other locations. They then have to manufacture them. Then they cryopreserve the CAR T cells, and then finally they come back to us. This can be timely. This can be costly. And some patients, you know, there's data out there that about 8 to 10% of patients undergo apheresis, but never actually make it to the CAR T product because their disease is too aggressive. They've already progressed before you're able to deliver it. And so how could we overcome these sort of obstacles in CAR T delivery? And so we started working on this vector called LV2019, which is a lentiviral-based dual-targeted vector targeting both CD19 and CD20. And this was based on preclinical work done with Lentigen. And they looked at these mice with sort of high tumor burden models. And they found that, you know, a specific construct with a distal CD20 and a proximal CD19 with a 4-1BB antigen really led to the best outcomes in these preclinical models. And so that data became the premise of us sort of getting that vector on site. And then what we did is we actually showed for the first time, and this has now been published a long time ago, that you can make CAR T cells with the Clinimax Prodigy device, and that you can make them on site, you know, and actually have CAR T cells that look similar in phenotype, transduction efficiency, and cytotoxicity than those made with traditional CAR T methodology. And so that was sort of the premise of our IND application to the FDA, and we sort of developed this system here using the Prodigy. So those who are not familiar with the Prodigy device, it's a closed device that allows you to sort of make CAR T cells in a GMP compliant fashion without the technical requirements of needing a clean room. So we actually worked in an ISO 7-like an air environment, but not a traditional clean room. And under the IND, we used this process, which was initially a 14-day process with IL-2 for cell expansion. And what we did that was unique was we made cryopreservation optional. Because we were manufacturing the cells on site, we actually started lymphodepletion during the manufacturing process, and we would do in-process testing, which the Clonimax Prodigy allows you to do, to make sure that the sterility, transduction efficiency, you know, endotoxin testing was all negative, and then started lymphodepletion to facilitate a truly fresh in and fresh out delivery of the CAR T cell product, also limiting the time between when the patient undergoes apheresis to the delivery of this product. So this is sort of the early part of my work here. And so, you know, we published this now, you know, about 5 years ago. We did a phase 1 clinical trial. And we showed that, you know, in this population of heavily relapsed patients, we included NHL and CLL. We treated 22 patients and sort of, you know, defined this vector. And so just to give a little bit about this, and again, this is sort of the background to some of the work that we're doing today, you know, we had a dose escalation study. We identified this dose of 2.5 million cells per kilogram, sort of a dose that we use for expansion. In terms of our ability to manufacture with the Clinimax Prodigy, we had 100% success in CAR-naive patients. But then when we took CAR after CAR, which the trial did allow, we did not have as great success. And we had sort of 4 patients who failed CAR manufacturing in that cohort. This was the manufacturing characteristics, and I want to just highlight a few things. We actually found that the majority of patients achieved their cell dose by day 8. So here we are using a 14-day process, but really, do we even need to be that long was a question that came up. The viability was incredibly high because we're not cryopreserving the cells. And so the viability of these products, they were very functional when we're infusing them fresh at greater than 90%. And again, I mentioned there was no manufacturing failures. We defined the safety of this dual targeted CAR, and it being a 4-1BB construct, which I think people are familiar with, similar to Lysocell and Kymriah, the toxicity profile really was not increased by dual targeting and largely driven by the 4-1BB cell expansion. And so we had 1 dose limiting toxicity at the highest dose. This was a grade 4 CRS that occurred in a high burden DLBCL patient that required sort of, you know, ICU level care and actually required hemodialysis. This patient actually is doing great and alive now 7 years later. But beyond that, that was our only grade 3 or higher CRS event. We had 2 grade 3 or higher neurotoxicity events, and only 7 patients required tocilizumab. This was a response focusing on the patients who got the sort of target dose of 2.5 million. The response rates were higher in that target dose, so we didn't see as good efficacy at the initial phase 1 starting doses. But one of the things we looked at was, you know, how did those patients who got a fresh infusion do versus those who got a cryo? We had some patients who got a cryo infusion because of logistical reasons, because of an infectious complication. And we found that, you know, in that subset of patients who got that fresh infusion, we actually had an overall response rate of 100% and a CR rate of 92%. And so this sort of became the premise of, you know, how do we design that next clinical trial? When we looked at the in vivo kinetics of the CAR, we also saw that the expansion kinetics were superior in those patients who got a fresh infusion. And then that the peak, you know, sort of CD3 CAR T positive cell population and the area under the curve, sort of the total cumulative CAR T expansion, again, was higher in those patients who got a fresh infusion. And so if we look just at those patients, you see here a PFS curve. We have a higher overall response rate and really a beautiful PFS curve, you know, about 60% in this, again, difficult to treat population. The other thing we wanted to show is what happens to those patients that progressed. Right? So we actually, you know, biopsied, and I agree with Dr. Davies, the importance of biopsying in lymphoma is really how we learn about the disease. And so we were able to biopsy every relapsing patient. And really, we found that we did not really see any loss of CD19 or CD20. And I'll show you this in a larger patient population later, but it does seem that dual targeting, that the mechanism of treatment failure is not antigen loss, but likely driven by other issues, such as T-cell quality, microenvironment, and a lot of different, you know, mechanisms of resistance. And here I can show you sort of the change in the sort of the pattern of CD19 and CD20 expression on pre and post biopsies in those patients who progressed. So really no correlation in antigen loss in patients who got, you know, this dual targeted CAR. Lastly, we found that there were a subset of patients who had late relapse. So they achieved a CR, but then sort of had later relapse greater than 6 months. And we looked at that patient population and we said, you know, what's different about them? And what was interesting was that the early kinetics of the CAR, how well it expanded in the first 28 days, actually was sort of predictive of their late relapse as well. So you can see the cohort of patients that sort of had late relapse had low expansion here. And then the patients who didn't relapse, and actually that one in the middle ends up relapsing like after 2 years. And so here we see that early CAR kinetics sort of drives again, not just that early response, but that late durability as well. So what was our initial takeaways from this work? Was that, you know, we found a safe and efficacious dose of this. We found that maybe giving a fresh CAR T-cell product, I would say to those of you who do allo transplant, right, we do fresh allo transplant cells. That's always been the paradigm. We've only shifted with CAR T and how we're delivering them. Relapse and progression wasn't really related with loss of antigen. We saw this late relapse signal with that early CAR kinetics, but we made a proof of concept here that, CAR Ts can be manufactured point of care with lymphodepletion starting during the manufacturing, you know, at a site. Along the way, we learned some important lessons, and I want to highlight this one story simply because I think it's important to share this data, and it's an area of interest for our team at the Medical College of Wisconsin. So we had a patient on this clinical trial who had very severe neurotoxicity. I have his permission to use his photos, and sort of grade 3 neurotox. And this was in the early days of CAR T. We did what we thought was the right things to do. We gave high-dose dexamethasone, then we gave pulse solumedrol, and, you know, he was still incredibly sick despite both of these. This was a pre-anakinra era. And so the question sort of came up of, like, should we do something directly in the CSF? There are other conditions where we actually use IT chemotherapy to mitigate, you know, neurotoxicity, such as HLH. And so we sort of said, you know, is this something we should try in this patient? And just to sort of show you, you can see here, I mean, this is really what he looked like, completely tremulous, not able to answer any questions, and incredibly sick. So this is, I think, to my knowledge, the first patient ever. We published this report to get intrathecal therapy to mitigate ICANS. And you can see here that we did an initial CSF as part of diagnostic workup that showed that the white count in the CSF was elevated. And then after he continued to decline, we repeated it. But I talked with the family and said, I'm going to try giving intrathecal steroids. And at that time, his CSF white count was above 100, which obviously is vastly abnormal. We gave a single dose of intrathecal hydrocortisone, and he actually said hello the next day. We doubled down on that and actually gave a dose of triple chemotherapy, so ARC, methotrexate, again, intrathecally. And after this, the patient continues to have a full and, like, spontaneous recovery. He did obviously require rehab. He was an older patient. We have an annual celebration of life, and this is him 7 years later, okay, in a complete remission. And so this changed our paradigm on how to mitigate steroid refractory ICANS, and we started doing it more. And so we published this in JAMA Oncology a couple years later, and we looked at our sort of practice patterns pre and post using intrathecal therapy. And we found that when we started using intrathecal therapy, that those patients sort of had a signal for early PFS benefit, had less cumulative steroids, and less infectious complications. And so, you know, we're continuing to build on this experience. My fellow will be presenting this at ASH. He now put together, so this is sort of, you know, there's centers that believe in this and centers that don't. I'm going to put that out there. It remains sort of a controversial system. But when you see people wake up with your own eyes, it's hard not to believe. And what I'll tell you is that we've never seen a side effect from this. So he's putting together a series of centers that are believers. And we now have a multi-cohort series of patients that have got IT. And so we're hoping they'll add to the data set that we've done. And I just wanted to share this. This is now our institutional algorithm on how we address sort of ICANS. We've now done this for bispecific therapy, and we've even done it for patients getting solid tumor CAR Ts. Again, mixed efficacy, but we have not seen a downside. And what I'll say is that if we care about global accessibility to CAR T, what I can tell you is when these things happen in countries that don't have anakinra available, which is most, simple things like intrathecal therapy can be a way to mitigate that toxicity. So that's my sidebar, but I think an important thing that we learned through this clinical trial. The next part is, you know, how do we take what we learn and create the next iteration? And so I sort of high said, you know, we figured out there were a couple of problems with our first trial. We want to improve early expansion. We want to get deeper responses. And so could we cook the cells differently? So a big part of CAR T is not just the construct itself, but how you make the cells, right? So I think of CAR T like a food recipe. If you change the ingredients, it's going to taste different. And so what we did is we changed the ingredients to make it taste better. And so there's data out there that looks at IL-2, different cytokines, and there's data that IL-7 and 15 might lead to a superior CAR product with more T stem-like cells, more memory cells. And then we wanted to shorten that manufacturing down. Like, why are we going to 14 days if the majority of our patients can make CAR Ts in 8. And so we designed sort of a CAR T optimization study, again, using our point of care platform. And we looked at these different variables. So we had a phase 1 run-in of sort of this new product, you know, just to show that it was safe. And then we opened up all of these cohorts to better understand how this behaves in a variety of different settings. And I'm going to share with you some data from these different arms. But just to sort of explain what we did is we had a fresh arm that used an 8 to 12 day manufacturing where you would flex to 12 if you needed more time to meet the dose. We had a 12-day fresh where everybody went to 12 days. And then because, you know, this whole cryopreservation is still a question, we had an arm where patients were 8 to 12 days, but they had to be cryopreserved. And then we had some disease-specific cohorts to get a better signal in CLL, primary CNS, secondary CNS, and mantle cell lymphoma. We've closed several of these arms, and I'll share with you some of the data that we've learned. First, cooking does make a difference. So if you look at IL-7 and 15, you see almost a linear sort of growth expansion of the CAR T product versus IL-2, where really there's not a lot happening in the first week, but then the cells start to take off in the Prodigy Clinimax device. So here you're getting much more robust growth quickly. In terms of manufacturing outcomes, how that sort of plays out here, it's a complex diagram, but you can see here at day 7, one day before our day 8 sort of harvest, we had 23-fold expansion of the T cells. Whereas at day 8, when we used our old process, we had 10-fold. So simply changing the cytokines leads to a more sort of proliferative CAR T environment, again, in vitro within the device. Are these cells more functional? So we then use a device called IsoPlexis, which is a single cell cytokine secretion device that sort of captures the cytokine panels, and you can sort of come up with a composite score. And so here we're going to show that both the polyfunctionality, so the ability of the CAR T cells to secrete more than one cytokine, which we think is important for CAR T functionality, and this composite score called polyfunctional strength index, that both of those were improved with the IL-7, IL-15 compared to our IL-2 trial that we did initially. And then, you know, what did the manufacturing platform sort of look like between these two arms? So I sort of mentioned we wanted not everybody can achieve cell dose at 8 days. So we had this sort of in-process test. If the dose was achieved, we harvest them on day 8. If the dose was not achieved, they went to 12 days. But we then sort of had a separate arm where everybody had to go to 12 days. And then we had a third arm using that 8 to 12 flexible process with cryopreserved cells. So this is all data that we're going to be sharing at ASH. And I updated these slides for this talk here. And so this is sort of what it looked like. We had these three different cohorts. It's small numbers of patients, so we're not going to be able to take away, you know, big signals. But again, we're doing this as a single center IIT. I simply want to show you that, you know, they're pretty much all the same types of patients. Age, you can see median, you know, 67, 66 in the three groups. You know, there was sort of an increased number of patients of male sex. Elevated LDH was in majority of these patients. And then sort of, you know, the manufacturing ability, you know, so in the fresh 8-day, all 100% made it at 8 days. In the frozen 8-day, there was one patient that needed to flex to 12. And obviously the 12-day patients, you know, none of them had an 8-day product. And then again, the ability to infuse fresh, again, the majority of people that we aimed for fresh got it fresh, whereas the frozen patients, again, they were mandated to have it cryopreserved. So this is what the different arms look like in terms of response. And again, small numbers of patients, but there's a little bit of a signal if you start to tease it out. So if you look at the sort of 8-day fresh versus 12-day fresh, you see higher CR rates in the patients who got the 8-day fresh. If you look at the 8-day fresh versus frozen, you see maybe a higher overall response rate in the fresh product. There was a trend towards more CRS, even with these small numbers, when you gave a fresh product, okay, especially with the 8-day fresh product. And so, you know, again, some small signals here. But then we went deeper, and we looked at, like, what is the immunophenotype of these CAR T cells products? And so we now compared the 8-day products versus the 12-day, and this is where it really becomes clear. you can see here that, you know, both in the CD4 and the CD8 population, the percentages of sort of naive and stem cell-like CAR T cells versus sort of EMRA or effector memory CAR T cells was statistically significant. Sorry, I don't know why that went forward. Statistically improved for 8-day products. And so, you know, again, despite small numbers of patients, we see this really significant p-value that just shortening the manufacturing process actually improves the immunophenotype of the CAR T. We then looked at patients who went to 12 days, and just as a test, we sort of sampled them during their process. And we saw that within the same patient, you see a shifting in immunophenotype the longer you cook the cells. So if you harvest them at day 8 versus day 12, you're actually shifting them in terms of immunophenotype. And they're going to become more EMRA cells the longer you have them in harvest. And I think there's a whole push out there, obviously, to shorten the manufacturing process to really focus on getting that naive CAR T cell product. Lastly, what about cryopreservation? You know, so we sort of dug deeper into cryopreservation as well, and we did a series of studies looking at those cryopreserved cells. So because we did in-house manufacturing, we were able to sample the cells before they were cryopreserved, and then we sampled them again post-thaw. So almost identical to like how we would have administered the cells at the two time points. And here we have studies using seahorse metabolism to really look at sort of what is the metabolism of these CAR T cells. And what you really we saw again was that statistically significant differences in oxygen consumption rate, the respiratory capacity, and the ATP production in the post cryopreserved cells. So it shows here that these cells that go through a freezing and thawing process, but they're a little bit less functional, that they aren't sort of metabolizing as well, and they're making less ATP. We then also did 10x transcriptome work and actually looked at the sort of single cell RNA sequencing. Again, we were able to sort of look at the cells fresh at harvest and then post-thaw. And this, again, I think is very interesting. This is all not published. But these here show that genes were indicative of apoptosis and senescence were elevated in the cryopreserved CAR T cells, while proliferation and cytotoxicity markers were reduced. So we don't know this because we only give cryopreserved CAR T cells, but maybe there is a value of giving fresh CAR T cell products. So sort of conclusions on this sort of part of this is that we have decided for our platform going forward, for our next CAR T cell trials, short manufacturing with a fresh product is the only way we're going to proceed, with cryopreservation and 12-day as a backup. I would say that shorter manufacturing was clinically more important than just freezing the cells, but there is something there with freezing the cells that we need to better understand. So all of that phase one work that we've been doing did lead to a multi-center phase two study. I'm going to go through this quickly because this was presented at Lugano. And so we worked with Miltenyi, and they have sort of took some of this data and then developed this multi-center phase two in the U.S. There's a similar multi-center phase two in Europe. And again, the same construct here, but, you know, now we have patients being treated with sites across the country. But one thing that they did do differently is they did commit to a fresh infusion. And so even though it is central manufacturing for this clinical trial, they actually manufactured the product, they harvested, they get it to the site to infuse within 36 hours of the harvest with lymphodepletion starting during the manufacturing process. So now what does this CAR T cell look like in a larger patient population? It's sort of what we have here. So this was interim results that we presented. It was sort of a pre-planned analysis of 59 patients. This is just their demographics. Again, you know, sick patients in their 60s. Here you see a better distribution of male and female, largely elevated LDH, which we know correlates with poor CAR T outcomes, and half had more than two extranodal sites. So in a larger patient population, you know, multi-site, we see an overall response rate of 73% and a CR rate of 51%, with a median progression-free survival of 9 months and a six-month PFS of 55. Now you can see here that these patients need longer follow-up, and this was an interim analysis, and we're continuing to follow this patient population, and it's now fully accrued. And we're hoping at a future Congress, maybe EHA or ASH next year, we'll have the final results of this phase two study. I'll show you here that the median overall survival was not reached at the time of interim analysis. And then sort of the best response rates by subgroups here, you know, again, really was depending on how they did to their prior therapy. If you had relapsed to your last therapy versus being refractory, again, you see a little bit of differential in terms of best overall response rate. Now, the toxicity profile, despite using a fresh product, again, remained consistent to what we saw in our IIT. We had no grade 3 or higher CRS. They had 4% grade 3 or higher ICANS. And then we talked a lot about count recovery, you know, it being sort of a marker here. You can see here that low counts, you know, are obviously a problem with every CAR T-cell product, but it wasn't profound here. About half the patients had neutropenia, and then a smaller percentage had anemia and thrombocytopenia. But here now, in a larger patient population, in a multi-center study, again, biopsies were done as much as we could to see what does the, you know, immunophenotype profile look in these patients that go after a dual targeted CAR. And again, here, only a single patient had both CD19 and CD20 loss. And the majority of patients, again, did not have loss. This is important because we talk about sequential therapies. So retaining CD19 or CD20 means that they can get a bispecific, that they can get subsequent therapies. And so if a dual targeted CAR can just not put as much pressure on the antigen, it's going to leave opportunities, and it could be why our overall survival, you know, again, was not reached with limited follow-up. So this was the first trial, to my knowledge, that gave a tandem dual targeted CAR in a multi-center fashion, but as a fresh infusion with lymphodepletion starting during the manufacturing process. 14 days vein to vein. So the one thing about this study is they use a 12-day process. I wish they had our data, and I'm now pushing them to actually shorten their manufacturing to 8 days. And an important thing just for patient care, no patient that underwent apheresis did not get the CAR. And that's important because of this rapid turnaround time, right? So no patient had to die because they were waiting for a CAR T-cell product. I'd like to highlight that the European Union version of this clinical trial, which was a phase three randomized controlled trial of this CAR product now called Zamtocaptogene, versus R-GemOx will be an oral presentation at this ASH. I don't think Ireland was part of this, but there are many countries in Europe that was. So they say imitation is a sincerest form of flattery. And why do I say that? Because everybody's doing 2019 CARs. And if you've been watching, you know, congresses, 2025 was the year of the dual targeted CAR. So many years, I was the one sort of, you know, talking about this. But this has exploded, and we now have 4 products. Obviously, I've been focusing on the work we have done with this 2019 vector, now called Zamtocaptogene, for commercial purposes. There's a Kite 363 product. This is the only one that is different. So this is a bicistronic CAR, which means it has 2 separate single-chain variable fragments versus a tandem approach. And to be honest, the one from Lyell and Janssen looked very similar to the Zamtocaptogene. But all of these studies actually showed results. And what are these early results showing? It looks good. So, you know, across these clinical trials, you're going to see here a consistent ORR, 90%, 87%, CR rate, 75%. Ours is the only data from a phase 2, so not shockingly, numbers often drop as we go from phase 1 to phase 2. But what you're seeing here is potentially the next generation of CAR T cells. And I don't know which product will get approved first, but clearly there's a significant interest in sort of displacing the single targeted CD19 CAR with a dual targeted. And we know that's happening because they are now, I don't know what's happening, but there are now phase 3 trials planned in the US and globally, head to head 2019 CAR versus commercial CD19. So this will answer the question definitively, but regardless, what I can tell you is that all of these look to be safer. They look to have higher overall response rate and higher CR rates. This will answer the question, though. Will dual targeting actually matter? Now, really focused on DLBCL, and I think actually the data for dual targeting CAR is actually more interesting in some of these other histologies. And so I want to focus the last part of this on, let's see how we're doing. All right, we're doing okay. On some of the work we've done, again, as a single center. So we published this just earlier this year in JCO. We had a dedicated arm in patients with mantle cell lymphoma. And we sort of had a hypothesis that, you know, those of you who treat mantle cell know that it is defined biologically by bright CD20. It is the one disease where giving rituximab led to a survival benefit as maintenance. And we know that drugs like glofitamab are incredibly active. And so CD20 targeting is really, really important in mantle cell. And so we thought that maybe a dual targeted CAR might be even more important in a disease like mantle cell lymphoma. And so we did this sort of phase 1-2 design, single cohort. It was 14 patients, you know, what we could do as a single center. But we took, again, this was an IIT, we took very refractory patients. You could have had a prior auto, a prior allo. We had no cap on prior lines of therapy like some of the other trials did. But we had used our optimized manufacturing, 8 to 12 days, fresh infusion for this patient population. And to prove to you that they are real patients like you see in the clinic, you know, median age was 63. You can see here half the patients had a P53 aberration, whether that was a mutation or a deletion. 20% had complex cytogenetics, and the median lines of therapy were 4, ranging from 2 to 8. And we even had two patients who had a prior allogeneic stem cell transplant. So in the end, 13 patients received an 8-day product, 4 patients received a 12-day product, 100% success. The 3 patients who got a cryo product is because things happen. One was found to have a fungal sinus infection. One's mantle cell was blastoid and was going so fast that we just gave them a cycle of R-CHOP and then froze the cells down. And one was found to have COVID-19 when we were going to start lymphodepletion, and so we froze the cells down. Despite this being a very refractory patient population, we have an overall response rate of 100%. And with a median follow-up of now actually 20 months, we've had 2 relapses in this patient population. And you can see here, really the beautiful swimmer's plot we see with this data. Here you can see duration of response and overall survival. Why is overall survival a little bit lower? And I'll show you why. It's that non-relapse mortality events happen after CAR. And I think that's something that Dr. Davies was talking about, why it's not a one-and-done therapy, is, you know, things can happen after CAR-T that are unrelated. You can see here the in vivo expansion of the CAR-T product sort of peaked around day 7 to 14. And we found that if you had circulating disease present, you got even higher in vivo expansion of the product. This was an example of just some patients, you know, that we had in terms of imaging. You know, this was a patient with a bulky tumor mass. This was the one that we actually had to give R-CHOP because it was growing so quickly before giving him the CAR-T. You know, this patient is now probably 20 months, 30 months. The other patient here is probably going on 4 years in terms of remission. And again, just want to highlight the number of lines of therapy that these patients have gotten, including bendamustine-based therapies, all the traditional agents, everybody was BTK exposed. We also did clonoSEQ MRD testing on these patients, and we found that clonoSEQ was very useful when it was done at day 90. So clonoSEQ is still evolving at day 28. We had people convert from sort of clonoSEQ positive to clonoSEQ negative. But those patients that were day 90 clonoSEQ negative, that's that flat line at the top here. And so here we're using MRD as a correlate to show that, you know, patients who achieved that deep response had sort of, again, favorable long-term outcomes. What about those 2 relapsing patients? So each one is an interesting story. One relapsed with a high level of circulating CAR Ts. And he was CD20 negative at onset and CD19 dim afterwards. So here, the dual targeted couldn't really do anything because they were CD20 negative to start. They sort of lost CD19. So there was CAR T cells circulating, but the disease progressed. And so antigen downregulation did play a role here. The second patient was loss of persistence. He relapsed more than 2 years after with no detectable CAR T. But here, you know, we had post-tumor biopsy, CD19 and CD20 expression remained high. So here, loss of persistence. So it goes to show you that the CAR story is individualized to the patient. There were 3 non-relapse mortality events, all infection-related. And in terms of CRS, you know, we know the Brexacel story, no grade 3 or higher CRS. 2 patients with grade 3 or higher ICANS, we saw a little signal for IECHS. again, I think we're capturing that better now that we have diagnostic criteria. Just to go a little bit more into the ICANS pivot here, because that's something, again, we're interested in as a group. At this point, we just give intrathecal to everybody, because if they develop grade 3 ICANS, that is our programmatic approach. So this patient had grade 2 ICANS. He started Dex, but he progressed to grade 3. We did an LP like we always do. We gave a single dose of intrathecal hydrocortisone. Triple therapy. But then we found out later that his biopsy, or the flow cytometry in the spinal fluid, actually showed mantle cell. And so now I got a little scared, right? Like, oh my God, did I kill the CAR T cells, right, by giving chemotherapy into the spinal fluid? And so we did multiple LPs afterwards, and we actually got cytokine analyses and flow, and we found that despite giving IT, the CAR T cells continued to expand, the mantle cell cleared, and if you look at the cytokines from the first LP, we saw a huge diminishment in the cytokines in the CSF after intrathecal therapy. And he woke up the next day and he, you know, continued to do well from a neurological standpoint. The only thing that's unique about this CAR is there's this late neurotoxicity signal. And we actually opened a phase 2 arm of this, and we're seeing it in the phase 2 in the multicenter. And we saw this interesting phenomena in this sort of light green where patients would have non-ICANS sort of toxicity. So their I-score is 10 out of 10. They'd have tremor. One complained of like vision diminishment, one complained of numbness. And they had this extremely high CSF count. And we actually flowed it, and I can show you, like, you know, like a white count of 1,000 in the CSF is not normal. And the majority of it were CAR T cells. So in a way, it's good because mantle cell does get everywhere, but clearly this CAR gets into the CSF. These bottom two patients were treated with a single dose of intrathecal hydrocortisone without any steroids at all with recovery. This is just showing that over time, we see hematologic recovery in these patients. I talked about relapse being the cause of death in two patients, but the non-relapse mortality remains a challenge after CAR T. We need to do a better job with infection management, IVIG, but even if you do everything right, not having B cells for a long time is problematic. Just going to show you a glimpse of what we're doing in CLL. So CLL is another histology where I think CD20 matters. And why? Because we know that Obin's better than Rituxan. And what's even deeper in terms of signaling CD20 is a T cell. And so we sort of opened an arm in CLL more recently. This is data that's, again, not published yet. 17 patients, just going to show you high level data here. You know, we have pretty good follow-up now on all of these patients. We have a CR/CRI rate of 82%. And a median progression-free survival of 32 months. So if you compare that to Lysacel here, you know, we have a PFS of 12 months, and I think everyone knows the CR rate was about 20%. So we're continuing to grow this population, but we think that this might be another disease where we might see some efficacy. And then there's also some exploration happening in primary and secondary CNS lymphoma. We're seeing very high overall response rates. My fellow, Dr. Dunton's presenting this at ASH as a poster. Durability is a problem. There's also a phase 2 cohort presented at the Lugano meeting, again, from the multi-center trial, showing again, but we've seen this, that we get the CAR T cells within the CSF space and that they're active within that clinical setting. So I went fast because I know I'm the last speaker before you guys all get to leave. But sort of a whirlwind of what's happening, I think, in next generation CAR T cell therapy. And you know, I think we're going to continue to see different ways to evolve this. But I think, you know, again, this is work that I've, you know, it's how do you put work from 10 years into 40 minutes? I think we showed that you can make CAR T cells, number one, on site, that dual targeting has a signal maybe to be better than single targeting. I'm going to say signal because you have to prove it in a randomized controlled trial. There's lots of these phase 2 studies happening. Phase 3s are being developed that are randomized. We have shown that you can actually, we've made over 100 CAR T cell products on site, outside of a clean room, using the Clinimax Prodigy. We've done lymphodepletion now in an 8-day manufacturing, meaning they get apheresed and start LD 4 days later. And we're delivering a fresh product and getting really nice responses in patients. And I think it's a paradigm that we've actually shared with people across the world because not all places are going to be able to get commercial CAR T. We believe in this IT strategy for ICANS, which is why I share it. I know that the whole world and the country doesn't always believe in the same methodologies to treat this, but it is easy. We all know how to do an LP, and we all know how to give chemotherapy, and that can be done worldwide. And I think that the dual targeting story may be differential, again, on disease biology. So stuff, themes that we've heard from throughout the day. With that, you know, I flew in last night, okay? And so why did I fly in last night? So I have three young kids. You can see them here. So my oldest is 8, my middle daughter is 6, and my youngest is 3. And if you guys have seen K-pop Demon Hunters, they love it. That's my youngest. She had a Father's Day visitation. And I felt like if I'm the only dad who's not there, she's going to feel so sad. So I had to attend that event yesterday morning. And then I subsequently got on a plane and I made it here. And I'm happy to be here. So I apologize for stressing out all of you, you know, especially with the U.S. flight patterns lately. I mean, we know what's going on in the government. But that's why. But I'm really, it's my first time in Dublin. Thank you, Elizabeth, for reaching out. We met at the UK last year when we were talking about mantle cell. We're actually doing some exciting work with the 2019 CAR. We're taking that to a CTN, sort of the bone marrow transplant network is doing a frontline high-risk consolidation with the dual-targeted CAR. There's a phase 2 going on right now.